Hi, my name is Ryan. I'm a PhD student with Vasu Kiraparthi at NC State. Today I'm going to be talking about our lab's work mapping the major leaf shape gene in cotton, more commonly referred to as the okra leaf shape gene. First, I'll start with a brief introduction to leaf shape in cotton. The vast majority of cultivars of cotton possess what is called the normal or broad leaf shape. In addition to normal, there are four mutant leaf shapes that make up an allelic series located on chromosome 15 of the D subgenome. And these mutant leaf shapes are subokra, okra, superokra, and sea island. In addition, there are also numerous loci scattered throughout the genome with minor effect on leaf size, leaf shape, lobe length, lobe width, and lobe angle. Here are some pictures for orientation purposes. At the top in figure A, we have classical normal leaf. These leaves come from a landrace succession in our program called NC11-2100. Down at the bottom in figure C, we have classical okra leaf. These leaves come from a breeding line that we have called NC05-AZ21. The major differences are the reduction in leaf area per leaf, as well as a highly enhanced lobing pattern with deeper sinuses and the appearance of these ectopic outgrowths along the lobe margins. These ectopic outgrowths are very random in nature in terms of their size, their shape, their location along the lobe, and the number of them that are there per leaf. In the middle, in figure B, we have the F1 heterozygote. Between the two, you can see that the shape is intermediate between the two types and that all three types are clearly distinguishable from one another using only brief visual observation. So why do we care about okra leaf cultivars? Well, there are a number of advantages associated with okra leaf cultivars, most of which stem from the fact that they have reduced leaf area, which creates what is considered a more open canopy, which allows greater movement of light and air through the canopy. Some of the advantages of okra leaf cultivars include a reduced incidence of boll rot, accelerated flowering rates, early maturity, increased resistance to whitefly and pink bollworm, as well as possibly reduced lint trash, evapotranspiration, and chemical application rates. But there are reasons that we don't often see okra leaf cultivars in cultivation, and that again goes back to the fact that they have the reduced leaf area, which can lead to suboptimal light capture, which means they perform less photosynthesis, they can shed bolls at a higher rate, and they have lower yield under optimal conditions. They also, this is compared to normal leaf varieties, they are also subject to increased weed pressure due to the increased penetration of light towards the ground. So how do we work around this? There was this idea in our program that I originally got from Dr. Daryl Bowman that an ideal cotton cultivar would possess normal leaves at the lower nodes and then at some point in its life cycle would switch over and begin to produce okra leaves at the upper nodes. Such a plant would possibly combine the advantages of the two leaf types while minimizing the disadvantages, as the normal leaves at the bottom of the canopy would increase light interception and reach canopy closure quicker, while the okra leaves on top would still give you a lot of the benefits of an open canopy. But knowledge of the genetic mechanism underlying leaf shape is likely critical for the development of a plant with this desired phenotype. So there were three pieces of prior research that were very instrumental in our research. The first was that the factor underlying okra leaf shape was known to act very early on in leaf development during the primordial stages. The second was that we realized that the differences between okra and normal leaf the increase in leaf complexity seen in okra leaf cotton was very similar to leaf shape defects seen in other species when class 1 Knox genes were misexpressed during the primordial stages. And then we also had classical genetic analyses and interspecific mapping studies using G. hirsutum and G. barbadens that had placed the leaf shape locus on chromosome 15 of the D subgenome, so we already knew which chromosome this gene was on. And we could also take advantage of the recently completed G. raimundii sequence because we were in the D genome. So the objectives of these experiments were to use an intraspecific G. hirsutum mapping population to identify SSR and STS markers that were linked to the leaf-shaped locus, and then to use these markers to better understand the genetic mechanism underlying leaf shape and assist in future efforts that we have currently going on in our lab to find, map, and clone the leaf-shaped gene in cotton. So the first experiment that we did was expression analysis, and we used a crude semi-quantitative RC-PCR approach to investigate the role of NOX1 genes in cotton leaf shape variation. First, what we did is we took full-length sequences of Arabidopsis NOX1 genes, and we blast searched them against the DFCI cotton gene index in order to identify ESTs, express sequence tags, with high sequence similarity to Arabidopsis NOX1 genes, and then we designed primers off of these ESTs. We then collected RNA samples from two different varieties, normal leaf genetic standard TM1 and an okra leaf breeding line NCO5AZ21. We took RNA from four different tissue types, the very top of the stem, which included the SAM, the shoot apical meristem, where NOX1 genes are known to be constitutively expressed, so we knew we'd find them there, then the primordial tissue, the young leaf, and the mature leaf tissue. We took this RNA, we converted it to cDNA, and used that cDNA as a template in a PCR reaction to get a rough measure of the NOX1 transcript levels. This is the results that we got. Over on the left, we have the NCO5AZ21 okra leaf, and on the right, we have the normal leaf TM1. Going down the side on the right, the letter number combinations are the names of the ESTs. GAPDH is a positive control down there at the bottom, and then the along the bottom are the leaf type, are the leaf type or the tissue types. S for the salmon-rich stem, P for primordia, Y for young leaf, and M for mature leaf. And what we can see here is that the okra leaf has elevated expression levels of multiple putative G hirsutum NOX1 genes later on in leaf development than the normal leaf, and that this expression is most pronounced during the primordial stages. And as we know from work in other species, expression of these genes at higher levels in the primordial stages can lead to leaf-shaped defects that are similar to those seen in okra leaf cotton, especially the increase in leaf lobing and the appearance of the ectopic outgrowths. And also, this is a factor that's acting early on in leaf development. So our next step was to do molecular mapping. We took the okra leaf breeding line NCO5AZ21, and we crossed it to a normal leaf landrace succession, NC112100. We chose this instead of TM1 in order to maximize marker polymorphism. We generated a population of 236 F2 plants from this cross, collected a leaf-shaped phenotype on all these individuals as well as DNA. We took 40 SSR markers that had already been placed on chromosome 15 in a high-density consensus genetic map and evaluated them for polymorphism on the parents. Additionally, we took 23 RFLP markers also placed onto chromosome 15 in the HDC and converted them to SDS markers and evaluated them for polymorphism on the parents as well. So the phenotypic ratio of our F2 population fit the expected 1:2:1 ratio, confirming that okra leaf is under control of a single gene, and also that the heterozygote is intermediate between that of the parents, and that it could be easily determined. Of the 80 markers that we ran, only 5 were polymorphic, and all 5 of them were SSRs. We ran these 5 polymorphic SSRs on our F2 population and mapped the leaf-shaped locus to a 5.4 centimorgan interval located between the SSRs GH565 and NAU2343. I'd also like to take this time to point out that this region is very close to the telomere of chromosome 15, and thus we believe that this region is subject to very high rates of recombination, much more so than the average spot in the genome. So next, after identifying this region G. hirsutum, we wanted to investigate the orthologous region in G. raimundii. So we took SSR and RFLP markers of the sequences and blasted them against the draft sequence of G. raimundii. We took the highest scoring matches on G. raimundii chromosome 2, which is the homeologue of G. hirsutum chromosome 15, and ordered these markers using the Struhl software. These are the results that we got. On the left, we have the order of the markers in chromosome 2 in G. raimundii. In the middle, we have the order of the markers in chromosome 15 in the HDC. And on the right, we have the order of the markers in our leaf-shaped mapping population. I won't spend too much time on this figure in the interest of time, but the key point to take home from this is that this 5.4 centimorgan region between the closest flanking markers, GH565 and NAU2343, is only 337 kb physical distance in the G. raimundii genome. This is a fairly small physical distance given the genetic distance, and we think this is explained by the fact that it's so close to the telomere. So what we did then was we took this 337 kb region in G. raimundii between the closest flanking markers and we annotated it. And there are 34 putative genes expected to lie between the two markers. And of these 34 genes, only 2 have been shown to have showed substantial homology to genes implicated in leaf shape in other species. These two genes are very close to each other. They're only about 32 kb apart, and they're separated by only one other gene, a serine threonine protein kinase. Both of these genes show substantial sequence similarity to each other, and both are most similar to the Arabidopsis gene LMI1, which is late meristem identity 1, which is also known as ATHB51 or aphelion homeobox 51. So what is LMI1? Loss of function of LMI1 in Arabidopsis has been shown to lead to elevated expression levels of a NOX1 gene and leaf-shaped defects that are characteristic of ectopic NOX1 expression. Hence, LMI1 likely serves as a upstream negative regulator of NOX1 genes. Furthermore, no NOX1 genes map near the L locus on chromosome 2 and G Raimondii. In fact, there were no NOX1 genes anywhere on chromosome 2. So taking all this together, we believe that these LMI1-like genes are strong as candidates for the leaf-shaped locus in cotton. To take this one step further, we took the G. Raimondii sequences of both of these genes and used them to develop STS markers. We ran these STS markers on the parents. Only one, 13LS195, was polymorphic. We took this polymorphic marker and we ran it on all 236 F2 individuals, and it co-segregated with the leaf-shaped phenotype, meaning that at the very least, this 13LS195 marker is very tightly linked to the leaf-shaped locus, and further confirming the two LMI1-like genes as strong candidates for the leaf-shaped gene in cotton. So in conclusion, what we have so far is that, taken together, the above findings and inferences indicate that modifications to a LMI1-like orthologue are strong candidates for the leaf-shaped locus L in cotton. Identification of the gene underlying leaf shape in cotton is an essential prerequisite for its manipulation and cotton cultivar improvement, and efforts are currently underway in our lab to find, map, and clone the leaf-shaped gene in cotton. These include looking at a larger F2 population of an additional 1,040 F2s, looking at an association panel that we have created of all the leaf-shaped mutants, including sub-okra, okra, and super-okra, that we've collected from the USDA cotton germplasm collection. We hope to do VIGs, viral-induced gene silencing, to silence these LMI1-like genes in a normal leaf and see if we get any movement towards a more mutant leaf. We hope to obtain full-length sequences of both of these LMI1 genes and see if there's any differences between the parents and see if there's any differences between the two that could, you know, possibly explain what we're seeing here. And I guess that's about it. I got time for some questions.
Questions for Ryan?
So is the lobing actually from like a cell-killing mechanism that kills the internodal tissue?
Well, the role of the NOX1 genes is to maintain stem cell indeterminacy. And so that's why they're active in the SAM. They maintain the stem cells that are there. And what I believe with the lobing is that this stem cell indeterminacy maintaining gene gets turned back on in the primordia, and that the lobing is caused by just periods where the cells are dividing without differentiating.
So it was nice that your original idea of Darrell's was to have this hybrid gene or whatever that would allow you to have normal leaves and okra leaves. And now that you have this information and that's a potential target, where are you going to go with this? Or is that even a feasible idea now? Because it would take modifications, right?
So. Yeah, it would take modifications. Basically, I mean, how I could see it working is if you could take a NOX1 gene potentially and put it under control of some sort of inducible promoter or growth stage specific promoter. But yeah, it would not be easy.
Do you plan to do genomic mapping all across all chromosomes, or are you sticking with chromosome 15?
We're sticking with the major leaf-shaped locus on 15.